What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our Experts Corner interviews every Friday. We get to listen in on conversations with short-term rental investors, and I get the pleasure of having these conversations that you guys get to listen in on. Today, we've got Terry Newell joining us. Terry, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, I'm excited about the conversation. We are sort of neighbors with your property, but before we dive into the property there, tell us a little bit about the backstory. I love to dive in and just hear where people are from, what pays the bills, you know, what got you interested in short-term rental investing, and then we'll have a good conversation about the journey. But let's start with the backstory.
Yeah. So I currently live in Franklin, Tennessee, originally from Chicago. I live here with my three kiddos ranging in age from 6 to 12, which is always a really, really fun time for those of you that have kids know. And my husband, Casey, lives here as well, has been a part of this journey with me. He is a manager in medical sales. And so I actually worked in medical sales for many, many years. And that was kind of where my real estate investment journey started. If we go backwards, back when I was living in Chicago, working in medical sales, having my second baby and kind of started taking stock, you know, I'm hiring a nanny on the side. I've got all this going on. And it kind of was just a moment in my life where I was taking stock of what I wanted my future to look like, realizing my kids were going to grow up really fast, and also being stuck with the golden handcuffs of making a good income. And so trying to figure out, like, how do I navigate this so I can take some time off and spend these like priceless years with my babies? So I started buying up long-term properties at that point in Hammond, Indiana. And I started like really small. Like the first house I bought was $60,000. So this was nothing big, but it was enough where I felt like I could do it and not be crazy nervous about it. So I started acquiring these houses, ended up with about 7 of those. And shortly thereafter, we made the move from Chicago to Franklin, Tennessee, which is when I gave up my corporate job and started doing the stay-at-home mom thing for a while. And once my kids were in school full-time, I realized I was antsy and ambitious, and I needed another project. And that's when short-term rental came onto my radar. I didn't want to just rinse and repeat. I felt like I could do long-term rentals in my sleep, and I wanted something to be a little bit more engaged in. And so it was when I started hearing about a lot of the tax benefits and the cash flow, that's when I kind of started considering short-term rentals.
Yeah. When was that? What year was that?
Oof. Well, that was 3 or 4 years ago when I joined, Fodacy.
Okay. Yep. Good. It's funny. Teresa and I went down a similar path. Teresa was like my sidekick in business forever. We were running down the real estate investing path, all of our developments, and you know, I'd develop them, she'd sell them, I'd fix them up, she'd sell them, and she was running kind of the marketing and sales arm. And she got pregnant, and we had the twins, and they were coming, and we were hiring nannies, interviewing them. We were gonna have a live-in nanny, and the minute those kids popped out, fired the nanny. I'm staying home. And that was it. She kept busy though for a while because we've been homeschooling since they were born. So
she didn't
get the when they go off to school to get antsy again. I'm really nervous to see what's going to happen when they're 15 now. And I'm like, there's a few more years that they're going to be around. And I'm like, okay, what's going to happen with Teresa? Cause she's kind of like you.
She's going to get antsy.
Yeah, she is.
Definitely. I don't know her, but I'm guessing she's going to
get antsy. She's definitely going to be antsy. And so, but it was a similar path. And they came and she saw him and held him and said, nope, fire the nanny. I'm staying home.
Changes everything.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And Franklin's a nice area. That's another spot. Teresa's always sending me places. She gets antsy on where we live. And so she's always like, let's move here. And so she's looking, like right now I'm getting a lot of Franklin, Tennessee properties.
Maybe this is a sign.
Right? I know. That might be. I'm going to have to tell her to listen to the podcast and it might be the sign.
It's beautiful here.
Yeah. Love it. I love that area. It's awesome. Just kind of that suburb of Nashville and fun area. So awesome. Well, listen, so we started getting interested in short-term rentals a few years back. We decided maybe we're going to, you know, we joined our community. We were around other people doing it and started recognizing kind of the work involved, what's involved, like, you know, and you guys, where you're at, you're from this kind of came from the Chicago area, living in Tennessee now. How'd you choose your area? What was the driver for where you guys ended up and walk me through that process?
Well, I wanted to make sure that it was somewhere we could drive to and use, but also I just wanted to be able to get there if I needed to check on something and not have it be a plane flight. So I kind of set a 5-hour radius around Nashville and started looking at the big one, like the Panhandle and the Smokies and the Blue Ridge Mountains. Someone very smart that I know have bought one in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So I figured that was a stone worth turning over. And I just liked, well, the price point. So I was kind of unwilling, even though I was told I probably needed to invest more. I had a 500,000 was my max. And so I found that kind of hard to hit in Florida and kind of hard to hit in the Smokies. But I felt like there was a little bit more wiggle room in Blue Ridge at that price point. So I also felt like Smokies scared me a bit. It was so competitive and there were so many amenities. It was like you had to go amenity crazy. And that just didn't feel authentic to me. It wasn't the kind of house I would personally vacation in. Not that there's anything wrong with those. It just didn't feel authentic to me. So I just naturally gravitated towards Blue Ridge. And even though everybody, you know, the realtors, everyone told me like, I don't know, you need a view or you need water, right? You need a view or you need water. You keep hearing it 100 times. And they're like, I don't know that you're going to get this at your price point. And I'm like, that sounds like a challenge. Let's go. So I set my filters on Realtor. I was like, I don't want to see anything over 500 and I don't want to see it if it doesn't have a view or it doesn't have water. And I just started like obsessively picking through, which is what I do, through the listings and found my little beauty that I found.
And I love that we did that. Like, it's so important. I always tell people, like, you have to figure out what your buy box is. You've got to identify, like what you mentioned, the drivers in the area, the things that help those properties stand out, view or water. And then we set our parameters and regardless of what all the outside noise is telling us, because it is sometimes everybody means well when they give us advice, but at the same time it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I can't tell you how many times I hear advice from, especially our boots on the ground partners who we love and we use all the time, but they're like, oh no, you're not going to find that here. Oh, that doesn't exist here. And I remember a realtor / management partner in on the Bourbon Trail when I was searching there about a year ago, we were looking and she's like, you know, Sean, everything you're asking for a unicorn, right? Like this is a unicorn in this market and you're just not going to find it. And I said, well, to each their own, we can agree to disagree on this, but I've made a living finding those unicorns. And so I'm going to hold off. And so I love that you did that. I love that you said, you know what, I'm going to draw a line in the sand and I'm going to, I'm okay saying no to a whole bunch of properties that might not fit the criteria. And it's so, so important to identify that buy box, figure out what our budget is, say what we want. And then obviously you'd had enough market knowledge that when you were looking at it, say, yeah, I think I can place 500,000 here and figure out how to make this work. Right. You weren't being unrealistic, but maybe you were being a little choosy and picky, which is a good thing when you're an investor, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then what's kind of interesting about this property is that it sat on the market for a year. It was on the market for a year. And when I came across it, I saw that and I got nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I showed it to my realtor and I was like, this one like looks like if I can see past, the old furniture and all the terrible pictures on Realtor, if I can look past that, I feel like this has potential. It's on this cute little lake, little tiny lake. And he was like, well, I'm like, but I'm nervous. It sat for a year. What does that even mean? Why would something sit for a year? Why would something this good sit for a year? He's like, we can at least check it out. So he sent his people, sent me a video. He's like, everything checks out. Like, it looks like it's in a good neighborhood. He's like, in worst case scenario, we go through the inspection. And if something glaring is there, we get you out of it. And so we did just that. And it turned out to be actually in like really great shape. It was just an old man who owned the property next door, was in no rush to sell it. And so that was even just for my own self, like a learning, like don't always just assume because something is sat or just don't make assumptions. Do your own due diligence. Don't just make assumptions.
Yeah. And it was, because there's a lot of reasons things sit. One, the number one reason is many times they're overpriced. There's nothing wrong with the house at all.
Which it was.
Most of the time it's overpriced. And like you said, the seller's not motivated to make a change. So it'll just sit there. It'll sit there for months. And sometimes it's overpriced by 10 grand. I mean, sometimes it's not like grossly overpriced, but usually it's overpriced. Second, you're also the environment that you're walking into or on the heels of was a steep interest rate hike. And And mm-hmm. a lot of buyers were like, oh man, I don't know about this anymore. I might sit for a minute. So the buyer pool shrunk significantly as well. So those two things happened and properties sit, and it could be and turned out to be a really good property. But really good piece of advice and lesson is don't make those assumptions. Like, it's not, there's a lot of good properties that are worth pursuing that are sitting on the market for a significant amount of time. In fact, when Jacob Payne, my acquisitions manager, I tell him all the time, I'm like, one of the number one searches we look for are properties that are on the market for more than 6 months, because we know that they're getting a little bit more motivated, but a lot of times they're just sitting there and now everybody's starting to ignore them.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That was exactly what it was.
So you found it. Was it an existing short-term rental? Like, was there any history as far as a short-term rental in the past? Like, what was the condition of the property in the setup?
I didn't realize it was even, yes, it was a short-term rental, but not, I don't even know how to say, not active. Like, it may be like a handful a year. I don't know, you know, if you're trying to get the tax benefits of it or what, but I did, when I first went into the home, I saw like a guest book and I was like taking pictures of all the pages, cause I was like, I need these for my yes. listing. So, cause otherwise I have no, you know, how you like to do it on Vodacy with the quotes, but yeah, so it was, but it didn't have, I wouldn't call it like a history, and it was very outdated inside. So it needed a lot of
work. It's not something we relied on for any sort of past performance. Like, it was just kind of, okay, we're starting from scratch.
I felt like we were starting from scratch 100%. Yes.
Nice. And how was it? Any sort of a fixer upper? Was it any sort of a, like, did you have to do a lot of value add before you were able to launch it? Walk me through that process.
So it was really cool. So I worked with a really great realtor, and he was really connected, and he is connected to short-term rentals. He owns a bunch. He had great connections for me. And he was telling me throughout this process, because I was like, I still have three little kids. Like, my husband works, I'm in charge of these. I don't know when I'm going to get down there and do all this. And I think from what I've heard on Vodacy, that's a lot of people's nerves is like, how and when am I going to have time to do this? Because not everybody can. So he set me up with a designer who was an boots on the ground designer. She managed everything from removing all the furniture to designing all and bringing in all the new stuff, as well as a contract. She worked hand in hand with the contractor who got all the inspection things that we needed to get done. And so for $10,000, I was able to, from Franklin, Tennessee, do virtually nothing and walk into the home. Now, I shouldn't say virtually nothing. I did a lot as far as creating, kind of taking that Vodacy effect and creating a heartbeat for this property and giving it a name and a logo and designing the guest book and a sign, all those things. But she did the boots on the ground, and it was a godsend. Like, I couldn't have done it personally without that. Yeah. But these people are, I mean, there's people out there doing this now, and you as well, and Vodacy as well doing this. And that made it doable for me. And then when we didn't actually see it finished until we went to take pictures, to do the pictures. And then me and my husband spent the following 2 weekends if you've seen our pictures, but there's a walking path with lights down and we fixed up the fishing poles. They weren't hung the way we wanted. Like, we spent 2 full weekends, honestly, the time of my life. It was a blast, putting all the finishing touches on it.
I love it. Do we want to give them a shout out to do it? Do you want to give the realtor and the designer there a shout out on the podcast?
I am blanking on his last name right now, but I actually don't know if he's like really busy, and he's actually told me in the past that he would let me know if he wanted to
fill stuff
on Vodacy. Yeah. Cause I asked him I was like, you've been great. I'd love to like sing your praises. So I will get back to you on that.
Okay, that's good. Well, that's all. I always ask, because sometimes, you know, in those areas, if people are listening, it's like, hey, we worked with some great partners. Let's give them a shout out. But sometimes those good ones are they get stacked up with a little bit, right? And so
busy.
Yeah, awesome. So we went there for the setup. You're there for a couple weekends, and you're hanging out and bringing it to life with the photos. So did you guys do your own photography?
No, we hired a local photographer, and we did lifestyle photos partially because I was like, we're kind of the target market, me and my family, my three kids and or couples. So we did, it was $200 more, I think, to add in lifestyle. I was like, let's just do this. I still don't know how I feel about them, especially when I'm looking at myself on this listing, but I know it's kind of trending right now. So we got some of those, and, that was really beneficial, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The photos look good. And those of you listening, you know, if you're a brand new listener, longtime listeners, you know this. We post these properties in the show notes, so you go check them out. Success leaves clues. We always say that, and you can go check out how these properties are presented. If you're ever in an area, I always suggest staying in these properties so you can get the fit and finish in person. And so go check it out. This little Moon Lake Retreat, really fun property there in Blue Ridge, which we're on that little lake. My property's on a little lake as well, and it's a fun little area. And, you know, we're rolling into a fun time of year for that area, summertime, right? Uh-huh. It's always fun to be summertime. And so as we get this one set up, any challenges, anything any hiccups along the way as far as timelines and, was it a pretty smooth process? Sometimes that setup phase is super smooth and sometimes it's got a lot of challenges.
I know. I kept expecting the worst. I like to be prepared. Uh-huh. No, I honestly, the setup phase went really overall pretty great. We did end up finding out that we needed a whole new HVAC system, which that was a bummer. But mm-hmm. I still thought to myself, I still would have bought it if I had known that, you know, and worked right. it into the contract. So that wasn't, you know, it wasn't terrible. And then things actually went better. We didn't think we owned the dock. And then we found out we actually owned the dock mm-hmm. so we could do more stuff to it. So the actual setup process, I would say, went smoother than I thought it was going to. Nice. That might have been beginner luck.
Hey, that's always good. We always talk about how hard the setup phase is, and there are many times it goes really smooth, mm-hmm. but when it is hard, it's really hard. It's really stressful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't last very long. Like, you get over it, right? It's like but you're having to actually deal with some issues sometimes during that setup, and most of it's timing issues, and some of them are, you know, the pressures we put on ourselves to get these suckers launched as soon as possible. And so, but it can sometimes be really stressful. So that's really exciting to hear that it was a pretty smooth process. One thing I skipped over before as we were in the acquisition phase is, what type of financing did you guys go? Did you run down traditional financing, asset-based financing? Did you guys, like, what was the financing situation that you put on the property?
Yeah, we used your loan company's CMG to look at our options, and we ended up going with the traditional loan because we were still able to. Yeah. I'll have to give myself a pat on the back. I made the decision to put all those other long-term rentals that I had under my name, knowing that we wanted to kind of build a portfolio so that my husband still has some borrowing power at this point. So we did just do a traditional loan, 20% down. And I'll give you kind of the lay of the land, actually. So I said we were earlier that we were wanting to be under $500,000. We ended up mm-hmm. getting the property negotiated for around $430,000. Mm. And we put 20% down, and we put probably another $70,000 into all the furniture, all the things, and $10,000 into design, and here we are. So yeah, traditional loan.
Love it. And so we got that done. What was the decision on management? I know originally you said you wanted to be a drivable distance, 4 hours away. Did that have anything to do with management, or what management decision did we choose?
Management was, so this was, I feel like, one of the hardest parts of this whole process for me, mm-hmm. aside from my nerves of even jumping into this to begin with. Lots of nerves, lots of fear. And I am a very conservative number cruncher. Mm-hmm. And I was really struggling to underwrite, even at the highest, you know, in the best case scenario, you'll make this. I was really struggling to underwrite these properties with full management. But at the same time, I did not want to be running a hotel. I did not want to be answering every single message from a guest. I don't want to be tied to my phone. I have little kids. That's not what I want. So I found going back to my realtor here, he offered me an option that he had started, which was co-hosting, but kind of not in the traditional sense. I own the listing. He's my co-host, and he just has a group. We're on a WhatsApp with the cleaner and the handyman and the guest communication. And all they do is communicate with guests and coordinate with the cleaner. I still order supplies. I still have eyes on everything. I can get involved if I want, but for the most part, I'm trying to let it just run itself. And so I'm doing that at about 8% versus 30%. Yeah. And that has been so, and I was nervous. My realtor was trying to talk me into it. And I was kind of trying to be like, no, I don't I don't want this thing. I'm used to my long-terms, their property management. I don't want to mess with it. But once I created it, actually, it was like my baby. And I was like, wait, I couldn't just hand this over to somebody. Right. Are they going to love it as much as I do? Right now it's been working really well. I'm only a month and a half in, so I'm very early, but it feels like I can actually make the numbers work with this way of doing it.
With this. Yeah. And it's interesting. I always think that it is like probably the most important decision we make as investors in short-term rentals is how are we going to do the management? Like who are we going to partner with? Are we going to do it ourselves? Are we going to do like a hybrid approach like you're doing? And, one, it makes a massive difference on the bottom line because it is by far and away our largest expense if you're going to do full service property management. But also it can be a really time suck if you're not set up correctly. If you start pulling and you start doing it or you start doing things, even the hybrid approach, but done correctly, set up correctly, it can be very efficient too. And so it really matters who you're partnering with, how you're setting it up, and making sure when you're a little bit further away that you got the right boots on the ground partners. And if you do, that process can be really seamless, really smooth. Yes. And I'm glad to hear that it's working out that way because it can save you a lot of money as well. It puts more money to the bottom line.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so we're a month and a half in. We're June, so we launched. Did we make the spring break rush, or did we launch right after?
We did not. We launched end of April.
Okay, awesome. Talk to me about how the launch went.
Well, so that's actually kind of interesting. So I guess the strategy that I was working with my co-host team, and I'm not sure, I'm trying to think what you've said about this, is to like go in really low price yourself. You got to get those first 10 reviews. But what we found when we went in really low is we got a little bit of riffraff.
Yeah.
And which was really stressful for me because I had just poured my heart into this thing. And then our first ones, there were stains everywhere. I mean, it was a bit disheartening. I was like, I had that moment of like, oh my gosh, what did I just get myself into? Like, is this how it's going to be? Come to find out that was, again, I'm still new, but we've had quite a few, probably 12 different people stay since guests stay since then. And that was an outlier, but it was our first.
Yeah.
It's our first.
You're like, oh man, what did we just get into? Right.
I was like, if this is how it's going to be, this is going to be terrible. And I'm going to be stressed out.
I'm out before I started. Right. And so it's hard because and this sounds really like kind of rude, if you will, for lack of a better term, but there is a direct correlation with the pricing and the quality. If it's low priced, you get a lot of low quality guests coming in. And the higher the price, the higher the quality of the guest. And that is relative to the property. And so like we do during our launch phase, we will have lower than where we want to be pricing wise. But we have what we typically do is we're really trying to rush to get those 10 to 15 reviews, but we want a lot of momentum. I want a bunch of bookings. So we are going to be lower priced in that, like doing what you did in that strategy. It's the exact strategy we would do as well. And it is, but what we're typically doing is we're going to be lower priced than where we want to land. Like if I'm underwriting, upscale or luxury side of the market, I'm going to be a price tier below it. I'm not going to be all the way down in the market itself. Right. So, gotcha. I'm going to be lower priced relative to where I want to end up, but not necessarily always the lowest price in the market or in the bottom of the market. But sometimes you can't avoid that because even on smaller properties, the smaller the property gets, you start dropping that price a little bit. All of a sudden you start to feel like we're getting the riffraff coming through our property. And it's, it's a very interesting correlation that the higher, more money you charge, the less problems you have. Lower you charge, the more problems you have. And it's like, it's just, that's how it works out. It is what it is. And we have to know that as investors. So I'm glad that one, it didn't last. I'm sad that it was your very first one, but you only had upside from there. So that could be a good thing, right? It's like
that is true.
Maybe it's the first guest in my Cherry Log property that's right by you guys.
Yeah.
So the third guest that we had, we were in our lower priced deal, and the third guest we had, the cleaners called us up, management company called us up, and the cleaners, they're like, you got to talk to the cleaners. and they were sending me pictures, and it looked like they filmed The Hangover in our cabin. I literally had mattresses on the deck outside.
We just
spent we spent a little bit over $130,000 just furnishing it. Everything was brand new. Everything's done. I mean, there's liquor bottles everywhere. There's stuff everywhere. And I'm like, what in the heck? And she's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, give me the guest name. I want to call him. So I called, and the lady picked up, and she was mortified. She was so embarrassed. She was like, oh my gosh, we had a bachelorette party, and me and my friends went there, and it got out of control. I'm so, so sorry. I'll pay for everything. We'll put it back together. She was like, which that was like best case scenario. I was ready to like get mad at her, but she was like, I'm so sorry. This is so embarrassing. You're the owner. I am so sorry. Like it was funny. Wow. So I was about ready to be like, what in the heck just happened? I'm like, geez, Louise, good thing we don't have any cameras in that property, you know?
And, yeah.
She's like, I'm telling you, this is a beautiful property. So anyway, since then, they've been back to my property like six times. They come twice a year, every year. And she's like, this is one of her favorite places. And so like I've got like three reviews on there between her and her girlfriends that go visit this property. And every time now it's spotless. And so it's kind of funny guest I had turned into like a repeat customer, and he's one of our best customers. But I laugh about it now, but then when we looked at it at first, I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? It was funny.
Yeah. And I was, that's, I mean, I can't believe that turned into a repeat guest. I didn't expect you to say that. Yeah. But what I was glad, what that did prove to me was we were able to document it and get reimbursed for all the materials that were stained. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't quite sure how that was going to work out either. And so that gave me like peace of mind. Like if it does get trashed or something happens to it, that as long as I can get some money back, like anything can be fixed, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the thing. It is a lot of times things look a lot worse than they actually end up, you know, being. Things clean up. Things can be fixed. Things, you know, and like you said, as long as somebody's covering it, and we've got that coverage there, whether it's the guest directly, damage insurance, you know, some of that stuff that we can tap into, it can be put back together, and we start, you know, we're back to the races, because it is going, things are going to happen. You're going to have people in and out of the property. Again, though, as you start to become a little bit more on the higher side of your market, when those numbers start to get higher than the average of your competitors, all of a sudden the problems really start to drop. I mean, you don't have nearly as many problems. And so, we started off like that. You said the rest of them have been pretty nice and pretty good, kind of uneventful, yes. I guess. Uneventful is good
exactly.
In the real world, right?
So, exactly.
So how's the summer stacking up?
Great. And I don't want to get too excited because I know we're still underpriced, but we've been going up in price for sure. And I mean, we are booked all of June, all of July. I mean, we've got a few random days, but like all the way almost through August right now. So I'm very excited about that. It's a good way to started.
It is a good way to get started. Anything that you feel like you had to, you know, any major adjustments along the way with guest feedback in the beginning that you were like, hey, we missed this, we need to fix that. Mm-hmm. Or is most of the things everybody saying, hey, listen, you thought of everything.
Yeah, honestly, so far it has nothing. In fact, I'm almost like wishing the feedback would be more specific, because it's always like, it's a lovely property, it's beautiful. And I'm like, well, get specific. But no, it hasn't, nothing that I'm trying to think if there's anything we've had to alter or change. The one thing we did kind of turn a closet into a bedroom of sorts, a third bedroom, a kid's nook, and it's got a slanted ceiling, and it's definitely intended for kids. So we did kind of realize we needed, and we couldn't be a six person. We needed to be a four adults plus two kids, or else if we had somebody with six adults and they were like, this wasn't very comfortable. And I'm like, yes, I bet it was not very comfortable. So we've had to make some tweaks around like the types of guests that we're bringing in and getting clear on that.
Yeah, that's how are you clarifying that? One of the things that, and I don't know if you're putting it in the, you know, when you're communicating, But one of the ways that you can kind of clarify that is you make that design around that area very juvenile, right? Like make it really fun and make it look like a kid nook, right? Instead of an adult area. And so like sometimes you can design around that and make some, you know, even just adding some different artwork that's more juvenile and fun and like kid friendly, like if you will, or kid looking than adult looking. And sometimes that helps articulate it without even saying anything.
That's a great point. And we don't have a ton of because we were trying to like appeal to teens and kids. So it's not as juvenile as it probably should be. That's probably really great advice. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously you can set the expectation when you're communicating, you know, that, hey, listen, this is really set up for four adults and two kids. And, yes. And that's always important to do. We still want to do that. But sometimes you can articulate that through the design that you might think about in the future. Sometimes that's one of the best ways we can kind of articulate that without saying it before it becomes, you know, an issue on having to tell them.
That's a great point. I'm going to go back.
Perfect. So that, so we've got that, rolling through the bookings. What are the plans for the future? What do we, are we adding property number two this year? We're rolling right to the next one. Or are we going to get this one stabilized first?
I want to get my material participation, bonus depreciation, all that stuff in line for this year, you know, to help offset my husband's W-2. That was the main reason we did this. So I want to get that for this year. And I like proof of concept. So I really want to see how this thing performs over the course of a year. Cause you know, when you're getting up and running, it's not necessarily true numbers and all that. So knowing myself, I will go slow and I will wait at least another year, but I think in 2027, I mean, maybe a beach place. That sounds nice.
I like it. Yeah.
It's been really fun to bring my kids along through this process. And like for the most of what they can remember, like mom didn't work. And so now I get to actually be like, no, I just work behind the scenes and here's another way to quote unquote work. And so it's been like showing them, like, for that reason alone, I'm like, even if I break even on this property, to have gotten to pull my kids and teach them through this process, I feel like is worth so much.
I say this all the time. If you've listened to me for any length of time, I'm repeating myself over and over. It's one of my favorite parts about this asset class is how families and kids do it together. And then the kids getting interested in a journey that they're not typically exposed to. And there's so many different little lessons you're learning even from setting a property up and having to put things together and understanding like, hey, listen, this is an investment. We're looking, people are paying to stay here and we still have to pay mortgages and does it cover and all that stuff. Like kids, because it's a vacation home, they get really interested in it.
Totally.
And it's crazy how early my kids were interested in like underwriting and looking at numbers and, you know, would this one make money? Will this not make money? I remember when Grace was like eight, she was sending me properties like, Dad, I found this one on Zillow. Tell me if this is gonna make money. Show me why it will or why it won't. Right. And so it was really fun. And that's super young to start thinking about that stuff. And it's been really fun to be for me too, as a parent. And it's one of my favorite parts. And I don't think you understand that until you go through it, especially with young kids, but even older kids. But you know, it's amazing how interested they get in that process because it is a fun asset class, right? It is something fun that they can use and kind of relate to as well.
Yeah, and totally. And I've got my son doing data entry for me, helping me enter expenses this summer, and I'm going to pay him for it, you know? Yeah. So it's like, there's all these ways, as I was saying, like, I know I didn't necessarily buy it as a lifestyle asset because I didn't always dream of having a second home, but I'm now calling it my life skill asset to show my kids how to do life.
That's awesome. I like that. I might steal that from you. I'm going to say, I'll give you credit for sure, but I've always said lifestyle. Now it's a life skill asset. I like that. Awesome, Terry. Well, as we wrap up, I always put you on the hot seat and ask you, because I appreciate these conversations. There's always lessons learned in them. I love that we let people listen in on it. They're our favorite thumbed up and liked episodes is by far these conversations. But at the end of them, I always ask you, as we kind of grow up and get older and go through these processes, what piece of advice would we like to give our younger self or somebody listening that might be thinking about getting into this? Is there something that comes to mind there?
Two things. One is that confidence often comes after action, not before, and that fear is not a stop sign. There has been so much fear and nerves for me through this process, through every new thing in my life. Moving, we moved states. There's a lot of fear. And I just try to remind myself that is a human emotion. It is not a sign from the universe that you are meant to stop here. And it is just another kind of hurdle to overcome. So yeah, talking to my younger self, I'd be like, don't let that stop you. Keep going. You will regret it if you do not.
I love it. I love both of those. You know, it's so true. Like, I feel like everything ever, like if you look at all the things in your life and you look at all the things you were scared to death to do, but you did, usually those are the that confidence comes, right? We have the confidence to say, man, I was able to do something really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on the other side of that fear, mm-hmm. right? And that fear, if you let it stop you, you don't have that, you don't ever build that confidence. You don't ever have that opportunity to look back and say, man, look what I just did. And, and I'm with you 100%. There's so many times where we justify fear by saying, well, maybe this is a sign. Maybe this is my sign not to do it. I so agree with you that is not your sign to not do it. Fear, everything you want is on the other side of fear, is what I believe.
That's right. Exactly right.
Awesome. Well, Terry, listen, this has been awesome. I appreciate you joining me. This has been fun for us to have this conversation, get caught up on where you guys are at. Super rooting for you. I'm excited for the summer, excited to get past that launch phase and stabilize and start getting those numbers that, you know, like not the discounted numbers, right? You're getting really close. I looked, we're at 7 reviews. And so you're getting to that stage where you're creeping up those numbers, and that's going to be really fun to watch. Those of you that are joining us, listening in, we always appreciate your time. I know how valuable it is. It means a lot that you spend it with us. You guys know I don't run ads or sponsorships, so the only two favors I ask you at the end of every episode is share the show, like it, review it. If you have more than 30 seconds on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, those things help us, because even if you don't have somebody to share it with, the algorithm is really good at finding other people just like you to share and put it in front of. And so that's the only way this show grows, is organically. And so your help is very much appreciated. And the final, most important thing I ask you guys at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.